Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and we're going to be talking today about computers and phones. You may be thinking about getting a new smartphone, and we'll talk about that with Jesse LeGru, technical team lead with the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Division of Information Technology. We call it DOIT. Focuses on a lot of things, but desktop and laptop security projects, something he works on a lot. You're going to be talking about the pros and cons of getting a new smartphone and also answering your computer questions. I hope you'll join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page titled The Larry Mueller Show. Jesse, great to have you back. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
Apple just released the iPhone 7. What's different on this version?
So with a lot of different upgrades when you get any device, especially any kind of cell phone, generally you're getting a better camera, you might be getting a clearer screen, you might be getting more battery life, and a lot of these features are added to this new iPhone generation. So 25% brighter screen, longer battery life, a 12 and a 7 megapixel camera, so front and back, and a lot of those just additional features. The thing that probably most people are talking about is what it doesn't have, which is the headphone jack.
Yeah.
So they're going with the normal lightning connector, which is the small, you know, if you use a later iPhone, it's that flat plug you use to charge. That's the main connector. There is an adapter that comes with the phone, so you can use any kind of standard just standard stereo connector, and it does come with its own headphones with it. The biggest thing is they wanted to save space for other technologies in the phone, including, you know, a faster processor, more room for battery, and it doesn't feel like a whole lot of space, but there's, I guess, the potential for gaining something when removing older technologies, but a lot of people are kind of up in arms about it because it's, well, something we've been using for quite some time.
Yeah.
Personally, I actually use Bluetooth headphones all the time, so it's not the same thing for me, and their new headphones that they have that you can buy separately are also Bluetooth. So I think that's becoming more and more popular, but there are still quite a few people who are concerned that they don't have that headphone jack.
I can see why people would be irritated about that. They talk about water and dust resistance.
Yeah, and so the water resistance, and it's interesting if you look at different articles, you know, there's a big difference between water resistant and waterproof.
Yeah.
And you'll see them kind of used interchangeably, but basically it'll be, you know, resistant to water. So I wouldn't go, you know, into a pool with it necessarily. But that, you know, a lot of the phones are coming out with similar technologies to be more resistant to water. So it's more safe when you use it, and you don't have to really worry as much about damaging your phone.
There are now stereo speakers.
Yeah, and that was the one
on the iPhone.
Yeah, that was one interesting development that seemed kind of neat, especially if you are using a larger. So, for example, the iPhone 7 Plus, so the larger screen. If you are watching videos or movies, and you actually do want to hear that stereo sound, and you're not using headphones, it kind of gives you that, you know, the normal stereo you get. You don't just have the one speaker. So it's kind of a neat little addition if you do like to use it for, you know, watching videos or even entertaining a few people at once.
To be honest, my iPhone is about two generations back. It still takes pretty good pictures. I'm happy with it. You often wonder, how important is it to get the latest version?
And usually it comes down to a few things. The biggest one for most people is price, just because they do have different plans where you can get upgrades and you can kind of get a subscription for it through your carrier. But the biggest thing is price, but also kind of what are you getting from the phone. So if you have an iPhone 6, it probably works really, really well for everything you're using it for.
Yeah.
when I look at the iPhone 7, for me personally, I don't think I'd get a very big benefit from the new phone. Now, maybe the battery life, if it was that significant and using it on a day-to-day basis, maybe that would be a reason for me. But generally, the cost is the biggest factor when deciding whether you want to upgrade or not. If you do have the upgrade plan, then you know you might be able to get one in a few weeks and you're covered. But if you don't, you might have to pay $600 for a new phone, and that's a significant investment.
That is a lot of money, and that's one of the reasons I. And then your monthly charges are higher,
and they could be in this case. I know with a lot of the different phones, when they had 4G or 4G LTE, you kind of have a premium charge usually for that, above and beyond experience. In this case, I'm not sure if that's the case. It kind of depends carrier by carrier. So whether you have Sprint or Verizon or AT&T, every plan is going to be a little bit different and have their own charges. But as far as the actual kind of technology of that cellular signal, there weren't really, at least from what I had seen, no significant changes. The same thing we've been using for at least a couple of years. But a lot of the other features in the phone have just been enhanced.
I'm going to get the battery life is not as good as it is with the 6 versus the 7. I'm going to get one of those little extra battery things that you can attach.
Yeah, and a lot of those are really useful. One thing that I've used quite a bit, especially in traveling, is they have the little battery packs you can use to recharge devices. They work really well. You can actually get ones that will probably charge your phone for a week and just on one charge. So they're extremely popular. And I'd probably recommend just about if you have a lot of devices you like to charge, including cell phones, it's usually worth picking it up, especially when you're traveling, because you can plug it in and you don't have to worry about, that battery life.
We have one more thing before we get to the phone and Lauren and the others who are waiting online, and that's Samsung recently issued a recall of its Galaxy 7 smartphones. They're burning up, apparently.
Yeah, so, they started the recall, I believe, on September 2nd to tell people, turn off your phone, don't use it, call this number to basically get an exchange, and you can rent another phone if you need to, so you can keep on using your wireless service or use an older phone. But due to a battery defect, they are exploding. They're causing fires. One of the instances that I saw this morning, which it's difficult to look through the news and find out, potentially what's real and not.
Yeah.
But that somebody, left their phone in their Jeep that was, being cooled by air conditioning. They brought their new desk in their house. They're like, oh, we're going to take the dog out. They came back to the Jeep. The Jeep was on fire. And all because of, in this case, the phone. So a lot of different groups are kind of cracking down on, including airlines. You can't bring that phone on the airline, and Samsung's just telling turn it off. But there's been just an increasing number of reports of people that actually have, a lot of bad things happen, fires and property damage or personal damage to themselves or someone they know. So it's a little scary.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Lauren and Racine, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind today?
I have a question about I have a 6 Plus, and I have a big problem with this so-called touch disease, where the phone will not respond to any touch, so you can't move from screen to screen, or you can't delete things. And I don't know why Apple, being the wonderful company that they supposedly are, hasn't done something about this.
And from at least right now, it's. For Apple, it's actually a large chunk of what they're dealing with repairs right now is actually what they're calling this touch disease. And this is something that happens with kind of any technology that's released. Flaws come up in one way or another. In this case, it came up where you have a touch-sensitive screen and it has issues. And they are fixing them as they can, but it is a significant portion of what they're really dealing with right now in repairs. A lot of them are specifically this issue on this specific device.
So what would you do? What would Lauren do in this case? Would you go to the Apple Store and?
Yeah, I would go to the Apple Store. Any Apple retailer should be able to facilitate a repair, especially if you do have an AppleCare warranty. So there's a lot of them in Best Buys, for example, or you can find them online at Apple's website. But I'd recommend going directly to an Apple Store and finding out how you can get it repaired.
Yeah, there we go.
The only thing that seems to help is to hit the phone, on the heel of your hand several times.
Yeah. Yep, and I haven't had the problem myself, so I haven't really experienced it. But in I've had things freeze up, and I've had to restart the phone, but nothing like this, the touch disease that they're talking about. I would take it right to the Apple Store to see what they could do, because they might even have something that could work out in the short term, even if you don't have necessarily a warranty plan for the phone.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best. I had something happen with my iPhone. I forget what. Anyway, it wasn't working right. I turned it off, and I turned it back on, and then it worked.
Yep, sometimes restarting helps.
I'm sure Lauren's done that many times already, but once in a while that works too. Lauren, thanks. Gary and Wapan, your turn. Hi.
Hello.
Hi. What can we do for you?
I am an older gentleman. I'm 67 years old. I'm computer illiterate. I can use a computer, but it's usually an act of frustration. I'm going to be on my own soon. I have to get into the computer age, and I have to get a better phone. I have an old flip phone. That's all I use. And that's what I'm speaking to you with now. Well, actually, I have a Bluetooth headset. But I need a suggestion of what can I get for a laptop computer that will allow me to get it in some kind of program to learn how to use a computer, and then I need a suggestion for a new phone that is more compatible with society today.
And
go ahead.
Your laptop, would you be primary? Would that be just sitting at home, Gary, or would you be?
I'm a truck driver, so I'm going to be Wi-Fiing here and there, and
okay.
I want to be able to get a program that I can learn how to use a computer.
Yep. Okay.
And I don't want the cheapest model. I want something that's good and dependable. And I'm just looking for a suggestion.
Okay. Great. Jesse, what can you suggest?
So in this case, especially when being very mobile, one thing I actually consider in this case is kind of the hardiness of the laptop. For example, they have Panasonic Toughbooks that if you drop them, they're more resilient to that kind of wear and tear. So that's one thing I'd consider is getting something that might be able to stand up to a little bit more abuse. Mm-hmm. As far as a functioning laptop, there's a ton out there. The biggest, retailers out there really are Dell and Apple. Both are going to be a little bit different, and they're going to have, as far as kind of teaching you how to use the computer on a day-to-day basis, one thing I'd actually recommend, which a lot of different schools and organizations have out there, are actually classes to teach you how to use just basic portions of the computer, whether that's Mac OS or Windows. I think probably Windows and those kind of classes is more common, but how to use that on a day-to-day basis.
I'm more familiar with Windows than anything. I have a computer at home, but I'm going to be separating, and the computer's going one direction. I'm going another.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. Yeah, and the Windows computer is in this case, I'm guessing you have an older computer, so the new computer is probably going to be significantly different, most likely.
Well, this one is like a year and a half old. It's brand new Windows 10.
Okay.
So at least it'll be similar in that regard.
Yeah.
And as far as a laptop to get, once I'd probably go to a store to just take a look at a few, see what the size is like. Usually size is a thing for me. So you can get a really small laptop, you can get a really big laptop. But as far as kind of exact model and manufacturer, you can go with a variety out there, but I would consider possibly one of the more rugged models. Whenever I look at a laptop, I look for, you know, you're really buying hardware. The software is going to be Windows 10, but as far as speed and usability, I look for something that might have a full keyboard, a very good size keyboard, so I can use it. So generally a 14 or 15 inch laptop. I would look for a solid state hard drive, which will make it run a little faster, and at least 4 to 8 gigabytes of RAM or memory. Above and beyond that, a lot of the components are going to be very similar. But if you are going to be mobile with it, some laptops, you know, so for example, if you have DVD movies you're playing, or you're playing music on it through CDs or something else, having a DVD player on the computer is going to be another component. So however you're going to use it on a day-to-day basis, maybe you do or do not need a DVD drive. Maybe you do want it to have a little bit more power. But I think any of the kind of mainstream models out there are going to work for you.
Yeah.
And personally, I like Dell because they have pretty good service and support. But you can get a variety of different models out there as well.
So there you go. What about phones?
For phones? So that's a it's a good question. So there's a lot of different phones out there. And as far as usability, I think most people do like the iPhone just for the ease of use. A lot of the other devices feel a little intimidating from the very start, but the iPhone does work with a Windows computer. It works with an Apple computer, and it works well for what it does, and including for even the added-on features and applications I might install. So it's easy in that regard. So I kind of like that.
Okay.
All right.
I think you guys have steered me in the right direction, and I appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Gary. Appreciate your call. Yeah, like those iPhones are easy to use. Don in West Salem, it's your turn. Hi, Don. Well, wait a minute. Don, hold on there just a minute. I want to remind everybody, Jesse LeGrew is our guest. We're talking a bit about phones, but we can also talk about other computer questions as well, so I hope you'll join in with those computer questions, too, at 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Net. Right now, taking a look at computers with Jesse LeGrew, and we turn to Don in West Salem. Don, hello. Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Yes, good day to you. I like the idea of smartphones, but they're turning into the brick. I mean, we started out with cell phones that were the size of a brick, and you had to carry in an attaché case, and now they're turning back into the brick again, where you can't just stick it in your shirt pocket or vest pocket, or you stick it in your back pocket, and it butt dials, Why can't, with all this technology we got, go to a flip phone again that's a smartphone?
And that's I think the desire when people originally had the cell phones was, you know, just obviously for conversation. Now we have cell phones that do a whole lot more, including applications, helping you in your just day-to-day life. We thought for example, the Palm Pilot, when it came out, hey, I can schedule, I can have my calendar on here, and all of a sudden I can do it with the phone. I have one less device. And it just kind of snowballed in that fashion, and now we're using a phone. I don't actually really use a cell phone to call people very often. I actually use it for a computer, a multimedia device. And there are still some manufacturers out there that will make some smaller basic phones, but they are very much a minority of the entire cell phone market.
And they're not smartphones.
And they're not, generally they're not smartphones. They just will accept and receive calls, some texting. They might have some applications built in. But one thing that, you know, a good place to take a look, if you did want to find, you know, let's say you wanted a replacement for your phone, you can actually, there are cell phone recycling plans. And they actually, I don't know what happens actually when they take the phones, but you might be able to actually acquire those phones through the company that aren't the latest and greatest cell phones that they have on the huge displays. Otherwise, they also have the phones that you can get on eBay or, it's difficult because you don't know how the phone's going to work. It's difficult when you can't touch it or feel it or know that it's brand new. And I think there might be some desire to go back to that, but I think it's, I don't see that necessarily changing anytime soon. There are some out there, but they are definitely a minority.
Yeah. So, do you know any brands that are out there that are kind of like that?
The only ones that I can find right now are, there were some of the BlackBerries, but even those are getting larger right now. I can't think of a whole lot that are really not smartphones, but I think there are smaller Android devices. Actually, the older iPhones were a little bit smaller, but most of them are meant to be, you know, high touch and using touch screens and using multimedia. But there are several small Android phones out there. However, they might still be bigger than would want.
There you go, Don. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. And Jim in Carroll Stream, Illinois, your turn. Hi, Jim.
How you doing today?
Great. Appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
I've got a HP laptop and lost the other person. And I got the computer, but she got the password to it. Windows 10. By accident, I downloaded it, changed the whole computer up, and I'm not a computer person. I had my nephew look at it, and he couldn't get rid of Windows 10, and or now I don't have LightScribe, and, you know, what I do, call HP, and can they jump on my computer still without me knowing the password and fix it or tell me my password? How do I find a password?
So the getting in without a password is going to definitely be difficult. There are applications out there. Some of them are open source. You kind of need a computer to actually download and actually kind of burn a CD. But they can actually help you kind of crack the password or reset the password so you can go back into the account. Otherwise, you can also start up the computer, and they have a recovery mode that might allow you to get access by kind of reinstalling Windows and getting back into the computer. Otherwise, any kind of computer repair location would probably have tools to get into the computer as well, at least for the password problem.
Yeah, how do you get into that recovery mode?
What you can do is when you are starting up the computer, you can hit F8. It'll give you options to start up in recovery mode, start up in safe mode, and it'll have a lot of different options. It's generally right before you're going to see the Windows logo. I generally just keep tapping it until you see something. If you miss it, you're going to have to reboot and try again. It happens, so
Okay to trust people, you know, with your computer, or should I call? I did this once before. I called HP up direct, and they went on my computer and were running my computer and everything, which is safer, so you don't, you know, people don't steal stuff.
Right, and generally the, I mean, for any of the repair locations that you're going to go to, they generally have a similar ethics of what they should or should not do with your computer, including keeping, you know, any of your data private. Okay. But, you know, any group you call, as long as you know who you're calling and they're a reliable source, they have a lot of remote support tools that they can use. Generally, for any of those tools to work, you need to have access to your computer. So if for some odd reason you can't log in, it's a possibility they can't either. But it all depends on the software that's on your system as well.
And if they get in, then they give you a password, but then you can change the password after the fact, and then you've got your own password again. So that's the way to do that. Good luck, Jim. Thanks for calling. Robert in Whitewater, it's your turn. Hi, Robert.
Hello. I have a question about solid-state drives. I know that they're faster than a platter-type drive on a computer, but what I'd like to know is are they as reliable? And is there anything that one needs to know about their operation that would be different in structuring the content and so on?
It's a good question. And so solid-state drives, they just save data on a chip rather than on a mechanical drive that's moving around. So as far as reliability, there's actually a few different benefits to having a solid-state drive. Anything that moves is something that can break. So the more things you have moving around, the more possibilities there are for something to get damaged. Because of a solid-state drive doesn't have any moving parts, it's a little bit more resilient. So if you drop it while it's working or something else, it's generally going to behave a little bit better in the long run. So it's more resilient to that kind of damage. And granted, it is faster. But I think the having no moving parts just gives you a lot of benefits. So I'd say they're as reliable. Everything fails. So I always plan for, you know, my computer to die at any time. So it doesn't mean that solid state drives are going to last 10 times longer than any hard drive right now. I've seen solid state hard drives fail in addition to just the standard mechanical hard drives. I'd say they're as reliable. In some cases, they might be a little bit more reliable, just depending on how you're using your equipment.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. And it doesn't change, the operation doesn't really change.
Right. You would be using it the same way you would use a standard drive.
Yeah.
You just get a little bit better performance. And it's actually, those are kind of becoming the standard in any
right.
kind of laptop or desktop right now anyway.
Thanks, Robert. Rusty in Stevens Point, your turn. Hi, Rusty.
Hey, good morning, and thanks. A little bit old school here. I still have the old Motorola military flip phone because it can take a pretty good beating.
Yep.
And I also have a Wi-Fi hotspot because where I'm at, we can't get high-speed internet. So I'm thinking about, like, the new S7 phone. Would that work as a hotspot as well as the phone, or would it not be as good as the Wi-Fi hotspot? I'm looking at maybe because the S7 I've read takes a little bit of abuse and it can be, you know, put in water or whatever. Would that work as both the Wi-Fi and the phone or not?
And was that the iPhone 7 you were talking about?
Yeah.
Is it Samsung Galaxy S7, I think?
Oh, Samsung. Okay.
Okay. In most of the later phones that you get nowadays, and I'm pretty sure that one would as well, they do have a hotspot capability. You have to pay an additional charge generally for them to turn that on. The only difference in reliability is let's say you have the same carrier for your hotspot and for your cell phone, and both, let's say they both use 4G LTE. In that case, most likely, it's going to be the same. It should work exactly like the Wi-Fi hotspot is, and if you're already paying for the Wi-Fi hotspot on your plan, it's probably going to be cheaper to just add that feature to your phone, and then that turns into a hotspot, and you can connect your laptop or any other device using the kind of wireless it's giving off for a signal.
Great.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And let's see, Gary in Clam Lake. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for the show. I've got an interesting thing that happened to me in the Chicago area at a Verizon corporate store back with the iPhone 5. We got the iPhone 5, two of them, and we travel a lot. And then the 2 years went by on the two-year contract. And the price did not change, and in fact, we went over several months. And we went into the Verizon store to get the billing changed, and I thought we should get a refund on what we paid in addition after the 2 years. And they said, no, they don't do that. Have you ever heard of such a thing?
I think generally they... for kind of refunding charges, generally they kind of wouldn't do that, at least to my knowledge. a lot of the phones are a little bit different too, or carriers, because they'll alert you when you get to a certain point and you hit those minutes. For my phone, I actually don't get alerted. So if I do go over in minutes, which is rare, I wouldn't get alerted, and I just have those overage charges. Every now and again, you can kind of convince them to maybe at a one time reset it or even evaluate your plan to give you a better benefit if you do have more voice time. So instead of paying for charges, which are generally a lot higher, you're just offsetting that cost by increasing the minutes on your plan.
Now, this is not with the minutes. This is with the contract to purchase the phone. You pay an extra amount each month. I think it was like $30 a phone, and then when that 2 years is up, then the phone is paid for, and your monthly bill should go down. And they did reduce the bill, but they would not give us a refund for the several months that we paid on the. Actually, it was over 2 years contract.
Oh, okay. Now I understand. Sorry, I misunderstood that initially. So for that, normally I would think that they would refund that just because it normally is at that two-year period. I actually have a similar plan myself for kind of a – it's the same as an iPhone or an Android Forever plan, so you get all the upgrades. However, I've not hit that two-year limit, so I haven't experienced that myself. But generally I would think, unfortunately, it may take a few phone calls. But most likely, if you get to the right person, they probably would. If so, let's say you paid for 27 months instead of 24 months for that plan. Most likely, if you find the right person, they will refund that 3 months.
And if you don't, next week, Jill, next week we have somebody from our consumer protection people on. This week on Thursday. Gary, you might listen in. That's something we could bring up on Thursday, because if you didn't get satisfaction, a phone call to the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection people would lead them to make a contact to Verizon. And sometimes they've had pretty good success with a lot of, not just Verizon, but with a lot of other clients. So they're on Thursday, so you might just listen in that day. And see, because there's no reason you shouldn't get your money back. There's just no reason.
I noticed, in fact, I just entered into a new two-year contract on the iPhone 6 Plus, and I have definitely marked my calendar to go in there and make sure they change the amount.
Yeah. Why can't you just buy the phone anymore?
You can, but it's $650.
Yeah, that's the problem. Andy in Madison, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hey, fellas, how's it going?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Thanks for letting me call. So I'm going to Europe next week, or next month, I'm sorry. Yeah, going to Italy, actually. And I have a Galaxy S5, and I use Virgin Mobile. I'd like to be able to use my phone in Europe. Is there anything I can do to exchange SIM cards to make it work, or am I just... going to have to buy a burner phone over there?
And that is a great question. So the biggest thing is whether the phone is GSM compatible. If the phone is GSM compatible, which I believe the Galaxy X5 is, but you'd have to take a look at exactly the model of your phone, then you should be able to use it overseas if you do get a SIM card. Once again, you're going to want to check in with Virgin Mobile just to confirm. But at least from what I saw, that model phone does have a GSM compatible model that you would be able to use overseas.
I've got the same issue myself. I'll be going to Scotland next month for a week, and I have Verizon, so I've got to get a hold of the Verizon people and see. It shouldn't be much of an issue with the iPhone 6, I don't think.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so.
So that's the place to go, Andy. Good luck. Thank you for calling, and good luck on your trip as well. Dan in West Bend. Hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm going to get a new laptop and want to know Jesse's recommendation for what I might get that can support two external monitors.
Okay. So the there's probably a lot of different models out there that will work for you. Generally, if you're going to be using it to support a lot of external monitors, the thing I would look for is, one, the connectors. What kind of connectors are you using? Are they HDMI? But also, I would get a beefier video card. because it's going to have to power that and make sure that you get a very good display on them. So I really can't pick out one specific laptop just because a lot of them out there are going to work. So even, for example, if you're an Apple, if you like Apple computers, any one of those should be able to do that, depending if you're using Lightning. But also a lot of the Dells or Asus, most of those should be able to support at least one, if not two. And I think even mine that I have, a Dell that's a couple years old, will support two. So I don't necessarily have a good answer on a specific model. I would just get something with a better video card. So I'd spend a little bit of extra money getting a video card that has more memory, and then just really physically finding out what ports it has available, just to make sure you can plug in multiple displays.
There we go.
Okay. What's your take on DisplayPort?
So DisplayPort, it works well. I have DisplayPort on Mac and on PCs, and it seems to work fine. The biggest concern I always have when I think about a laptop and my monitors is how many adapters do I have to buy? Are they going to come with everything I need so I can just plug it in, which is why HDMI is really nice to have, because it works with my TV, it can work with my computer, it can work with my monitors if I have the right monitors, and also it can power sound, which is kind of nice. So you can kind of save on some plugs if you get HDMI for everything, but DisplayPort and Mini DisplayPort work. I know there are certain video cards, especially with desktops, if you are powering a lot more displays, so let's say 3, 4, or 5, you need to get active adapters so they have enough power to basically feed the signal to the display so you can use it. In this case, for a laptop, I don't think you'll run into that, but Mini Display Port should work fine as well.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. We have something from... an email from Ben. His computer is shutting down and restarting every several days with no warning, stating driver power state failure. He's using Windows 10. It takes the computer half a minute to gather information on the failure, then the shutdown, and restart happens. Is this a problem with his computer drivers, or is it a Windows 10 problem? Can you maybe explain what that's about?
Yeah, I guess in this case, it could be a little bit of both. So let's say that Windows 10 was not on it before. Maybe it had an incompatible driver that Windows 10 didn't know how to work with. In this case, what I would look at is, did anything else change with the computer? Did you install drivers or do updates or even install a new video card that might have caused it? So in this case, it usually is a driver issue, and I would look to update or even roll back to an older set of drivers, which should hopefully resolve the issue, especially if this is something that has just started popping up. Windows 10 will automatically install updates, including drivers. And just because everything is automated and you get these security updates, it doesn't mean they don't break anything.
Yeah.
So in this case, I'd actually look within Windows and your updates. You should be able to see it in the apps or in the control panel and actually see if there were any driver updates that were installed around the time that this issue occurred. And if it did, I would roll back, see what happens. When I've had that issue, and I actually had my computer rebooting 2 or 3 times a day, if I was lucky, I made it a week. But it turned out it was a video driver. I probably adopted Windows 10 too early. So I didn't have all the hardware and all the software that would have worked perfectly for it. And eventually I got a driver that worked and it stopped rebooting. But the biggest thing you can do is, I think video drivers are very common, where you're going to have a driver issue. So I always just check the manufacturer's website. If you bought the computer from Dell or HP, go to their website. A lot of them do have tools to check your computer, look at what hardware is on your computer, and automatically update them for you. Oh. It's possible doing something like that could resolve the issue. Most likely it's a driver. So I wouldn't say Windows 10 is to blame, but it's also possible one of the pieces of the hardware aren't fully compatible, or there was a software update that, well, just went badly.
There we go. Jesse LeGrew, our guest today. He'll be with us till 12:30. We're taking a look at your computer and your smartphone with him. Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at your computer and your smartphone today with Jesse LeGru of the Division of Information Technology at the UW-Madison. Great to have him along. And great to have you listening in. Laura emailed us to tell us that she and her husband are Verizon customers. Just yesterday, they called customer service to talk about new plans, and they ended up saving $40 a month, increasing their data plan by 2 gigs from 6 to 8, and ordering new iPhone 7s for a grand total of $4.29 per month. Per phone, with the deal of turning our iPhone 6s in. We did have to pay tax on both phones, which came to a one-time payment of about $80. She just wanted to inform listeners of this new deal. I have to go to Verizon anyway. I guess I better call customer service, too. Again, I actually called them, last year and saved a similar amount of money just by talking to them about plans. We have Steve in Boulder Junction up next. Steve, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I've got an Apple 4S now, which works fine, but I'm thinking maybe I'd like to get a 6S or a 6 Plus or whatever. But I don't want to pay full retail. After the 7 comes out, will the price of the 6s go way down?
Yeah, and generally the phone prices for the older models will drop. I haven't looked at, how they've dropped over time, but usually that price is going to drop pretty significantly as soon as the iPhone 7 comes out. A lot of people are going to be trading in their old phones as well. So you could even get a used phone possibly for a pretty good deal, or even a brand new one. So I would say the prices are definitely going to drop. But it depends, you can get a really good used phone and you can spend a very little amount of money, which might be worth it, especially if you're like me. I tend to drop things. So it's always nice to know that you bought a used phone that was a little bit less expensive and you can go ahead and buy another one if you need to. So I'd expect the prices to drop, but they're also probably going to have a very good used market out there.
There we go.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. We have a listener email to say he's locked out of his Dell Windows 10 laptop, has tried the recovery method appkeen.com, and it doesn't work. And you were talking about this a little earlier.
Yeah, and the so there are a lot of tools out there that will allow you to do password resets. And I can't think of a very great open source one now at the moment because I haven't tested it with Windows 10. Since Windows 10 was newer, a lot of the tools that were out there may have just not worked. However, any kind of computer repair shop will generally have tools to do so. And there are other what they call kind of pre-installation environments. You can actually download like a CD. It will actually load kind of a basic Windows operating system or Linux, and it'll have built-in tools to do that. The one thing, whenever looking for these kind of tools, you're going to come along sites that may not be the best. They will be sites that aren't necessarily there to help you, but they're there to steal data or get information from you. And there are utilities out there you can pay for, but I would always just be very careful about what sites you go to, and, if you need to go to a computer repair shop, and they should be able to assist as well.
Gary in Mellon, it's your turn. Hi, Gary. Thanks for calling.
Yes. I live off-grid, and to use, like, the Internet, I have to drive in, 15 miles one way. I can only use it, like, an hour a day. What I'd like to get set up is have an iPhone and be able to get onto the Internet. Now, does that hotspot, does that facilitate that, or?
And so if you do have an iPhone, and assuming that the signal is good where you are at home, if you did want to get Internet on your other devices, such as your TV or an extra laptop, that hotspot option would give you that capability. So you'd be able to basically hit a button on your phone, normally through an application screen. It would turn it into basically a wireless hotspot. You'd connect to it like you were anywhere in a cafe or where there was just wireless internet, and you'd have that available on the other devices. But it really does depend on how good your quality is for your cellular signal, because if it's not good, it probably won't help that much. And generally, to enable the hotspot feature, it's not very expensive, but it's also not really cheap. It's probably about $30-40 a month, but it's also very similar to kind of if you do have an internet plan anyway. So it depends how you plan to use it, but it should work for getting basic internet to your other devices.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks a lot for calling, Gary. Seth in Wausau, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. I just had a quick question about Wi-Fi versus Ethernet and I guess the speeds of uploading internet to the, or data to the internet. We upload quite a large files, you know, quite a few times a week for photo delivery for our clients, and I read a lot about it. Our internet speed is 50 down, 4 up, and speed tests usually show that's pretty close, but I'm wondering if it's worth my time to re-drill, kind of run the lines for our cable in to put the Ethernet cable right to our computer to do that, or if it's such a negligible difference that we should just keep it over Wi-Fi.
So in this case, if your upload is about 4 meg, you're probably not going to get any benefit to using a physical cable. I would always recommend physical cables will give you the fastest speed just about every single time, and it depends on the wireless you're using. But in this case, you're not going to really see a difference. I would just continue to use the Wi-Fi. If you were transferring files between computers at your location, wired might give you some benefits, but just for uploading with your current bandwidth, you're not going to see a great improvement unless there are a lot of obstructions in the building, anything that might affect your wireless connection. But I don't think so, and it's probably not going to help you in this case.
There we go.
Good. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks. Jeff in Sturgeon Bay. Hello, Jeff.
Good morning, folks. Great program. Very timely as always. A message to the trucker on the road of a certain age. What I've been using the last couple of years is an iPhone 5 and an iPad. The laptop hasn't come out in, I bet you, a year. With the availability of wireless printing almost everywhere you go, it's business-wise anyway, that's worked just fine for me. The only other survival tool I have on the road, I guess, is a Kindle.
Yeah, there you go. So, and you're a fellow trucker, so you've had good experiences. Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate the call. So the iPhone 5 and an iPad, will that work?
Yep. For most things that you're going to do, it's going to be easier to use. It's less bulk. So having a tablet's a nice option.
Yeah, very good. Thanks again. Steve emailed that Jitterbug sells flip phones as well as smartphones. They're geared toward the over 50 crowd. He can't vouch for them, but they advertise in AARP magazine, ARP magazine. He thinks they do some vetting of the products that they endorse.
Yeah, and I was actually taking a look, and you can even, at least from what I'd seen, even Target has some basic flip phones. So what they're kind of called is standard burner phones. So you don't necessarily have a regular plan with Sprint or any other carrier. You can just buy a phone and use the minutes. And those are where you can get a lot of those flip phones. You can always buy more minutes. So that could be a good option if you're looking for that hardware and aren't looking for any of the extra frills or features.
Let's see. We have a couple of other emails and so forth. Jeremy in Soldiers Grove wanted to make sure listeners know it's the Samsung Galaxy S7, not the regular S7.
Yeah, the Note. So, yeah, the bigger version of the phone, so the Galaxy X7 Note. That's got the bad battery issues.
And Grant emailed to say that when he was in the UK, he buys a SIM card from a carrier caller. 3, it's reasonable and works for 30 days. Yeah, another way to go. And Sue emailed to ask if there's any way to make a cell signal stronger with an antenna.
And I would say yes. However, there's a lot of different products out there where they had, you know, a little antenna you can put under your battery, you put your battery back and it's supposed to give you a lot better signal. Generally, those things, at least for me, haven't
worked.
really worked. usually it's just getting out of obstructions. And if you had an antenna, just like any TV, if you're around a lot of metal and you can't get a signal, having a separate antenna where you can get outside or something else is always going to help. But I haven't used any specific to cell phones, so it's a possibility. But my guess is if you did have to invest in something like that, it's going to be more expensive. But one thing that I have looked into and used is called a repeater. It's something that you can get from Sprint or Verizon. So it's meant if you do have poor cell signal in your location, you can put this repeater near a door or a window where it has a better signal, and that repeats inside of your house, meaning that you're going to get a better signal inside of your house, and it's going to help. So it's not really an antenna on your phone. It's repeating the signal from the outside, making sure that the inside of your house has better coverage. So a repeater is a good option.
And where does the repeater go, inside the house or outside?
Usually the repeater has an antenna, so you could put the repeater inside your house, throw the antenna outside, and then, so it's kind of, instead of putting an antenna on your phone, you're actually basically putting that cell service right in your house by using this antenna and this repeater.
Okay, and you can get those from Verizon or...
Yeah, you can get them from Verizon, Sprint. I've used the ones from Verizon. I know a lot of other people who have used the ones from Sprint. And it's very common if you do have a bad signal area, and you might actually want to call Verizon or Sprint to talk to them about it, because every now and again, you might actually be able to get one without paying for it. So if you do have significant cell service issues, they may be willing to give you something, or you might even be able to find a used product that you can use for very little or no cost.
I have that same problem in parts of my house, so that I'm writing down writing this down, and that's another thing to talk to the Verizon people about when I go to visit with them about some other things. Well, here we are. Jesse LeGrue, our guest technical team lead with the University of Wisconsin Division of Information Technology, talking about your phone and your computer. He's going to be with us right up till 12:30. Join in at 1-800-642-1234. And we'll be back with Jesse right after this look at the news. Stay with us. Thanks so much for joining us today on the IdeasNet as we take a look at your computer and your smartphone with Jesse LeGrue, technical team lead with the UW Madison's Division of Information Technology, or DOIT. I'm Larry Mueller. And we have some open lines. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or go ahead and post on our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. Let's turn to Dan in Wisconsin Rapids next. Dan, thank you for calling.
Hello, Larry. This is Dan, obviously. I have a question regarding my computer, or actually two computers in our home. We had upgraded them to Windows 10. With the upgrade, everything worked just fine, including connection to two wireless printers. All of a sudden, at a time unknown to us, it stopped connecting to the printers. I've done everything I can think of. I've contacted the printer company for one of them, Brother, and they worked with me, but we were not able to come up with any solution. The other one is an HP printer, and I have not contacted them. I've looked on the internet for all kinds of possible solutions, but I have not found anything.
For both of those printers, are they connected to the network that you have at home through wireless, or are they physically plugged in to a router or a switch that you have?
They're wireless.
Okay. One thing I would probably look at, normally there is kind of a utility that comes with those pieces of software so you can kind of scan your network and find them. I'm sure that through the troubleshooting you did with Brother, I'm sure you turned everything off and turned it back on to make sure things reconnected.
Right.
I obviously would just try it again just in case, but what you might want to do is actually reset one of your printers to the very default settings and set it up from scratch, just to make sure that it can reconnect to your wireless Because as soon as it's on your wireless, and as long as your computer's on your wireless, you should be able to see it. It sounds like it might be an issue with the printers actually connecting to your wireless network.
Okay. Like I said, they had worked, but it was interesting. I was at my son's house, where it also has wireless printers, different from what I have, and it identified both of his wireless printers right off.
Okay. So at least it does appear to connect, at least with other devices.
Right.
What kind of wireless router or modem do you have at home?
I honestly can't remember exactly.
Okay.
I'm on the road.
One option that, you know, if you are able to get into that wireless interface, it will show you the devices that are connected to wireless. So it might give you, at least it might give you an idea of whether it's even connecting or not. So if it's not connecting, you know, I would just say, all right, you know, right now neither printer is working for you, so it's not helping. I would just reset one of them to complete defaults. And go through kind of the setup instructions that are normally there, set it up completely from scratch, see at that point if you're able to scan for, find that printer and connect to it. But resetting it and reconfiguring it from scratch might resolve the issue.
Yeah.
All right. I should say that I did have, with my brother, I did have it so that it would, my computer would identify the printer, but it would not print to it. So I think your suggestion is correct.
Yeah, it's a good idea. Thank you so much, Dan, for calling. Good luck. Carol in Glendale, your turn. Hi, Carol.
Hi, how are you?
Great, appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
Okay, I have an HP PC and an HP Touch Smart Printer. And about 3 months ago, I lost my hard drive and had everything, you know, recaptured, and everything came back. But since then, I have been getting, every time I go to print something, a driver update notification from Realtek, and it says that 5 of your drivers are missing or outdated, and update now, yes, or cancel. And I'm wondering, should I go ahead and update them? If I do say yes, then it starts for product registration and everything like that.
And so it's a good question. So Realtek is an actual manufacturer that makes some of the hardware on a lot of these computers.
Okay.
Without seeing the prompt, whenever I get any kind of notification that says, hey, I want you to update some things for me, every now and again I just have a pause just because I'm not sure if it's a valid software update program.
Right.
So that's just one thing I'd be concerned with.
I have the prompt up right now if, you know, but you can't see it up.
Yeah.
It says Realtek PCLE space GBE family controller, blah, blah, blah. And it said it's recommended that you install the new driver for this device.
Okay. New driver. So, yeah, without seeing it, I can't be completely certain. Normally, I would say that if you do get any prompts for updates, if it's from Windows or a trusted source, my recommendation would be to update it.
Right.
Just because you want to make sure you do have the latest drivers, that you have the latest software, since usually it fixes a lot of issues, even if you're not having it now or not having it yet.
Sure, and I have that set to do it automatically with notification.
Yep. And if it's a familiar notification that you're receiving right now, I would say I would do that.
Well, it's from Realtek, and I never, you know, I don't know if that's associated with Windows or not. Or...
Right. And is it, I'm guessing it's Realtek as an R-E-A-L-T-E-K. Correct. Okay. So that is a manufacturer of hardware. It is a little unusual if you haven't seen it before. What I'd probably do, what version of Windows are you running right now?
10.
Okay, so Windows 10 will automatically install drivers as it finds them and needs them, so it really should take care of most of the driver updates that you would need. Since the program does seem a little bit confusing, one thing you could do to just kind of remove that extra annoyance is go to your control panel and applications, and most likely you're going to see a Realtek driver update application or feature. You should be able to remove that and actually just let Windows take care of it. But Realtek is it's a valid hardware manufacturer, and it's probably something that comes bundled with a lot of the HP software.
Okay.
You just get a lot of the software that comes with your computer. You kind of get a lot of it, and a lot of them want to prompt you about many different things. So it's probably a valid thing, and it's possible before you had to rebuild your computer, you may have removed it in the past, or it may be a piece of software that was just released in the last year that you didn't have before.
Okay.
So I would say it's probably safe to remove it, but I'd say it's probably safe to use it as an update feature.
Okay. So toss a coin.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks a lot for calling, Carol. Yeah, you could probably also, if you contacted the company directly, if you contact the company and say, hey, I'm getting this.
Yep, they'd be able to confirm it. And generally, they recommend, you know, any of the software that they have built into their systems to keep them installed. Generally, I would remove them.
Okay.
Mainly because it's just a lot of stuff running in the background.
Yeah.
Windows already does it. It can save you some resources. But there's additional benefits to having that as well, because it might give you updates that otherwise you may not get or not get in a timely fashion.
There we go. Thanks, Carol. Maxine in Chippewa Falls, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I have currently an iPhone, an S5, and we are going to buy a tablet. We're trying to decide what brand to buy because, you know, the iPad does sync with the iPhone, and there will be a new, I think the new iPads will be coming out pretty soon. Now, I'm wondering if I might be better off to wait for Samsung to get its problems rectified with its phone, because I will have to be buying a new phone before a year or two, I imagine. And if I'd be better off buying another brand tablet, which would be considerably less, considering that I'm going to be using the tablet primarily for pictures and my recipe file.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think you really could go with just about any tablet. One thing I'd... if you are viewing pictures, but also are you taking pictures?
I probably will do primarily viewing, but it may be used for taking as well. I don't know. The pictures on the newer iPad are beautiful, and I expect that the new iPad that comes out, they'll be even better. But
yeah.
Okay, and so that would be one consideration, but if you are getting a new phone, most likely the new phone's going to have a good camera that goes along with it if you didn't want to use the tablet for taking pictures. Kind of from a cost perspective, my guess is the Android's probably going to fit your need. It's probably going to be far less expensive, but also depending on how much you really do, I guess, appreciate that clear picture, the screens will be significantly different depending on what you're looking on. So if it's really, really high definition pictures that you want to be able to zoom in and see a lot of detail, I think the higher end tablets or the iPads may be better in that case. But if it's just kind of everyday pictures that most people are doing, you're probably going to be okay with a lot of the different tablets. I know the Kindle or the Kindle Fire works really well. It's pretty mobile. They have a few different sizes, and they can be significantly less expensive than the iPads.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Harold in Superior, your turn. Hi, Harold.
Well, good afternoon. Enjoying your program.
Thank you.
A couple of different questions. First off, on Android phones, it seems like there's always things running all over the place in the background that, you know, why? I don't even see the reason for some of it. But and then you got these things that'll go online and look for your location or check your mail or whatever, and they're just constantly, you know, it says it run 7 times in the last 3 minutes or 5 minutes. And you know, I've got a number of those cleaners that go through the system, but is there any one particular one that would do all of that without my needing to walk it through, where it would just clean, empty the trash and clean the shut down programs that, you know, are running in the background?
And that's a good question. There are some tools that are out there that will kind of like a power state mode. If you don't use it as much, it will shut down applications that they become idle. A lot of the newer phones kind of do that for you automatically. So it depends on the version of Android that you have. But as far as full automation of all of that in a nice, easy way, I haven't used any personally. And my guess is even the ones that are out there, you'd probably have to sit quite a bit with to train and understand, all right, what program should I be stopping or starting? And what I'll normally do myself is I'll actually just go and start uninstalling applications. If I don't need it, I will just get rid of it. Because even the other features as far as what those applications have access to on your phone, you can tell your phone to just turn them all off. But many times you have to go application by application and say, oh, I want you to use Wi-Fi or I don't. So first I'd actually just clean out the applications you know you don't need or want. Then from there, you can always use something that will kind of keep track of the applications that you're running. The built-in applications that are actually there within Android do a pretty good job, and there are some application managers that you can use separately. But the process stats and other built-in functions are pretty good as well.
Okay. Yeah, it seems a lot easier in Windows. There's like every third-party utility will automatically, you know, run if you want it, if you set it up that way, and or you know, push one care button and it does everything that you've set up in the presets preferences. Second question. Do you know of any books on Windows 10 tutorials, preferably in Android, that, you know, there, you've got on the one end, you've got For Dummies, and on the other end, you got an Ed Bott book, which is like an encyclopedia, 1,300 pages. Anything in the middle there that's...
That's good.
And actually, personally, I actually like the dummy books. They work really, really well. Don't let the name fool you. They do pack a lot of great information in those books. Actually, that would be probably my recommendation, because they're usually really well written, and you can get a lot of information from it. So that would be probably my top recommendation.
There you go. Good luck. Thanks, Harold. Appreciate it. Patrick in Blue Mounds, your turn. Hi, Patrick.
Good afternoon. Great program.
Thank you.
I think I've got a solution for the woman with the print, the HP that had to be restored, and when she prints, it brings up the Realtek driver. Usually with HPs, that's a sound card driver. And that's what's going on, is when she sends a print job, it wants to, you know, make a ding or something. And that's where the break is. And I'll bet if she goes to HP and downloads the latest driver for her sound card, that the problem will go away.
Ah, all right. Well, that's worth it. And that's an easy fix, if it, you know, an easy thing to check on. Thanks, Patrick.
You're welcome.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. Yeah, why not? That's an easy one. Bob in Monroe, hello. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Yeah, thank you. I'm having to replace my laptop. It's out of date, and also my tablet, Samsung tablet, is annoying me. So I'm wondering about a two-in-one, such as the Microsoft Surface Pro. Is that a reasonable alternative?
I think in many cases for day-to-day use, it really is. The Surface Pro can be a pretty powerful computer depending on which version you get. Do you know if you'd be using external monitors or other devices that could be a concern?
I'm sorry?
Would you be using any external monitors or other external...
No, I do pretty basic stuff.
Okay.
I think for... So, and it doesn't mean that any of these external devices don't work. There's easy ways to make them work with peripherals, but if you are going to go with one device, I think the Surface Pro is a great option. It's a fully functional version of Windows. You have just as much power with that machine as you do with a desktop, and they do have a lot of peripherals that you can use, external keyboards, docking stations even. So I think it'd be a great option. I've used them in the past. I like them. So I think it'd be good for, you know, replacing the tablet and just having a fully functioning Windows system.
Great.
All right. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Go back to our emails. Gail emailed to say she skipped Windows 10 and is using Classic Shell to avoid learning Windows 8 on a middle-aged laptop without a touchscreen. Everything is working. She keeps her docks backed up on Carbonite and will replace her computer when it dies. What is the future of just staying with this?
I think it would work just fine. Yeah, if everything keeps on working and it looks like you have great backups, everything works the way you want it to, I would say continue doing it until something, well, breaks. Which could be in quite some time. So I'd say if it continues working, just keep doing that. Having the backups is a good option. So if you do get a replacement at some point, at least you can do that. But if it works, keep doing it. When you might find that you need to upgrade due to some new software that comes out that just won't run or it's not powerful enough. But I would say just continue on.
And some we had some people, we were talking about wireless extenders. Some people were suggesting that, but also Project Fi from Google.
Yeah, so trying to give wireless through, I guess in theory, throughout the world. So you can find out if there's kind of this Google project within your community or in your area. And there's a lot of other companies out there that also sell wireless service or microwave internet service. So it's basically if you don't have cable connectivity or DSL, you can buy or there might even be free subscriptions for wireless service, even if you're not in a heavily populated area.
Robert in Stevens Point. Hi, Robert.
Good morning. I have a question regarding my poor signal on my smartphone. If I climb to the edge of my driveway, which is up a hill a bit, I get a pretty good signal, but in my house there's one bar and sometimes none. Your guest mentioned something about a repeater. I've asked Sprint about that, something like that, and they said I need a Wi-Fi assistance to make a repeater function.
And that is, and at least from my experience in the past, it's not something that I had needed. I know a lot of people who have used those in the past. They do have different products, so it depends if they're talking about an extender, but they also have something that they call Airwave, which is a little bit different. It's supposed to give you different kinds of wireless coverage, including voice phones. But usually for the extenders, you should just be able to kind of set it outside. If you do need another wired or wireless connection, I guess it depends on your internet provider. But at least in the past, I haven't needed to worry about that too much, but it could just be the difference between providers.
Yeah, it could be.
I have no wireless provider in my home. There's nobody that can give me a signal here.
Yeah, the only thing I would, for wireless, it kind of depends on the location. Sometimes you don't really have a lot of great options until something comes along that can offer you services. But for the extender, I mean, they've been good options if you do need wireless access and you want to use your primary cell provider for that service. But in the past, I've been able to simply use an extender to get that service that'll repeat throughout the entire house, but not require the extra internet connection. But that could be the difference between that product and others that I've used.
And with that, we are out of time. Jesse, thanks so much. You're going to be back on November 14th, and we'll do this all over again. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Jesse LeGrue of the UW-Madison Division of Information Technology, our guest. He'll be back on the 14th. Tomorrow, We'll talk to the Secretary of Tourism about the great things Wisconsin has to offer. Stay with us.